welcome to ATO After the Whistle, the official podcast of the Capital City Supporters Group. I'm Johnny MacArthur. I'm here with Joey, you know, giving your reactions, analysis, and hot takes. Is a turnaround this week. I sped through the intro last week because I wanted to get this all over with. And I sped through it this week because I'm so gosh darn exciting. Joe, where do we even begin with that? Playoff win against our provincial rivals at home in a penalty shootout. Where do we begin? Go.
What is the opposite of unfortunate but not unforeseen? Because that's what I'm feeling right now.
I got to tell you, I know you and I weren't the only ones nervous about this game or even just dreading, I might even say. You know, you're kind of dreading. You're like, if York beats us at home, I'm going to jump off of this concourse. I might not make it to a game ever again. It would have been the worst possible scenario, losing at home to, honestly, losing at home to just about any other team in the league in a playoff during a late season slide where personally myself and you as well and probably many other people did not really expect us to go very far in the playoffs. Wouldn't have been a huge deal. It would have been the season just going out with a whimper. But going out to York would have been awful. And I am just eternally grateful that we did not let that happen.
There's this sense of like this was either the unluckiest lucky game ever or the luckiest unlucky game ever, and I don't know which side I'm on.
It's almost like I feel like we won despite like we definitely grabbed victory from the clutches of defeat when we tried to grab defeat from the clutches of victory. It's we just made it so hard for ourselves. You know, how many leads have we blown this season? Every week we're talking about how many leads we've blown. We blew two leads in that game. Two leads in the same game. Banger of an... And the thing is that we were mentioning this in the stands. I was like, okay, by the time that like the full time hit and we were going into extra time, I was like, yeah, we had two goals, but one was an Olympico that absolutely any competent keeper would not let in. Sorry, the pen was in extra time. But in regular time, you know, we had the one that shouldn't have went in. They had an incredible goal at the death with a little 16-year-old, 17-year-old Gimo. And then in extra time, yeah, we had the pen, and then they had an incredible goal 2 minutes later. And they also had a third one in the net that was called offside. Some might say wrongly. I didn't watch the replay, so I do not know. Frankly, I do not care. But it was just for a game where we seemed to dominate most of it. We weren't the ones that was creating the quality chances, at least not finishing the quality chances, were we? What did you make about this matchup as a whole?
It was an Atletico Ottawa-ass game, I think is the best possible way to put it. There were plenty of times where we were heavy, heavy on the attack that were just finished with either a subpar shot or a shot that hit the woodwork and came back to someone else who shot it, and it was a deflection, who then received it on the third rebound, who shot it way over the net. And when we did score it, we scored from set pieces in unlikely fashion.
Yeah.
Whatever. Those are Atletico Ottawa, I would say, corner pieces at this point in this season. It's what we get to. It's where we make our bread and butter is the unlikeliest of things, and then we bottle it a little bit to set up a brand new first.
Yeah, like it is really the story of ATO. We get the lead, and then we try to see the game out by inviting the pressure, and then a single defensive lapse ruins it all. It's been 2 years of this. It's been 2 years of this, and the fact, and I mean, Cargo must be how happy do you think he is that we managed to win that in pens? Because if we lost that in pens, this episode would have been maybe over by now. It would have just been like so long and thanks for all the fish, Cargo. We'll see you in another life. That's it. We don't want to talk about ATO anymore. We've talked about this exact same game a million times. Goodbye. But
real Ottawa soccer loss energy,
right? Like. No, it was brutal. When that 94th minute one went in, I know you weren't at the game. I was at the game. Hopefully I saw everyone listening to this. I know I saw most people listening to this. I met new people that are probably listening to this, and it was fantastic. So actually, to get that out of the way, I did not watch a replay of this game. I didn't want to spoil the great feeling I had from being there by having to watch it again as a neutral. So I'm going to rely on you for a lot of the actual analysis of the actual football surrounding this, because, you know, between swigs of beer and screaming at the referee, all I was doing was, you know, jumping around and waving my scarf around. So if we you're absolutely right, this is an ATOS game. Went up, invited all the pressure, although when we were attacking, we were attacking. 15 shots, 7 on target, 2 big chances. We led almost every single shot category except block shots, but we trailed every single pass category. And this is the part of the game where we were letting them do all of the attacking, and we let them do a lot of it, didn't we?
We did. And it was really evident that we weren't passing. There were quite a few moments, both just in the game as a whole and especially in the highlights package. A lot of our missed goals, a lot of our missed opportunities came from just a player being particularly hungry to score a goal when a pass would have been the absolute correct and obvious and visible option.
Yeah.
The biggest example being there was a very good moment towards the end of, I think, added time, where Tabla goes and takes a shot, and if you look to his left, Del Campo is wide open, onside, no marking, no nothing, goalkeeper doesn't even see him. All it would have taken is a little pass, but Tabla be Tabla, and Tabla take a shot.
Yeah. I was standing with Patrick and John and Kev and then Bryce behind me, and I mean, as much as we were losing at the referee, I think we probably lost at the worst at that moment. That was awful. We're like, bruh. And the amount of shots outside the box as well. I know after the first half, we were like, all it seems that we really did that whole half was just skim 3 worm burners from outside the box right into Vincenzini's hands. He's too good of a keeper for you to be doing that. It just was never going to come off.
It is worth noting, though, that all 3 of those hit his hands and scampered away and did make him recover. So we were hitting him with the right force. We were just not, you know, picking our shots, and it goes back down to that's what we do. We hit the ball hard and hope for the best.
And we don't have a poacher type to be up there to collect the rebound. But so big picture from the stats, obviously, you know, who cares about the smaller picture? But big picture is that when we lead all of the shots categories, but they lead all the passing categories, and they have 1 big chance, only 2 on target. We were giving them the ball, and we also led all of the tackle and defense stats. So we were basically, that just shows us that we were absorbing pressure. We were letting them take shots, low percentage shots. But we clearly have shown time and time again that we're not the type of team that can just shut up shop and then let you tie yourselves out and then finish. In 2022, we were that team because we would let you tie yourselves out and then we'd come and nick a goal at the end to get the result. The past 2 years, we've been trying to do the opposite. Score early and then shut up shop. And we cannot do that. So we didn't do that. And if today had finished in a 2-2 draw, it would have been, you say, an ATO-ass game. That would have been an ATO v. York-ass game. How many times have we drawn? How many times have we drawn 2-2 against these fuckers? And how many times has the decisive goals come at the last second against us? So
it did come down to a game of stylistic differences. I think in the minutia, there was a lot of just, we were letting them pass about, we were letting them kind of dictate the pace of that. But when we got the ball, we were just a small energetic dog with way too big of a stick that was just not sure what to do with it except run. And it worked for us because it enticed York into playing physical, which is something we knew that we could get them to do. It came down to frustrations and annoyances and really leaning on the fact that there's a rivalry not between just the fan bases, but the technical and playing staffs as well.
Yeah. I mean, we saw, everyone who was in the dub saw, you know, what they did after that late equalizing goal, coming right to celebrate in front. It was insane. That's probably among the worst of it I've ever seen. I wasn't at the Cavs game last year where fans got actually touched, but they were relentless. Players running off the bench, Dennis Solanovich running over, holding up the badge, holding up the badge, kissing the badge, holding up the badge, jumping jacks, pounding his chest. It's like, bruh, you put up a 6.1 on Fop Mob for 45 minutes and then got fucking yanked. Like, show some shame.
You know that scene from SpongeBob with the hoopla and the brick flies in the screen?
Yes.
Reel that energy.
It's really a culture thing there, isn't it? It's got to be the culture thing there, because they all act like this. They all act like assholes. We saw who was their right wing there. Cordova was constantly going down, flopping like a fish. Got a foul on Ruben because he looked at him and then went down grabbing his leg. We've also got one of their players allegedly yelling pretty common Mexican profanities at the crowd multiple times. Apparently the whole section heard it. I'm going to leave the details at that. But honestly, what an awful, awful culture that team has. And they showed it. And the reasoning for that is going to... That's going to influence a lot of this mailbag that you're about to hear later, which frankly is fantastic.
It's been a minute since I got to kind of sit down and talk coaching a little bit, but I think this comes down to a very old school of coaching that you don't see very often anymore, which is promote competition at all times, including amongst your own players. And it comes from this old idea that competition breeds success, breeds competition, breeds success into the ultimate pinnacle of a team, because those who can't compete, you know, to leave behind until you have this ultimate success. And that model will only work for the one season 19 years down the line when you've eliminated all of the non-competitors, quote unquote, until you've reached your pinnacle team. What we're seeing is what that school of coaching looks like in its very infancy of that stage, where you are forcing your players to compete with each other on an individual basis. You're forcing them to compete to each other on a unit basis, where you have segregated all of your attacking unit is over here, your midfield unit here, your defending unit here, your goalkeeping unit here, and they're differentiated from each other. And now you're competing against other teams to kind of create this culture of ultimate competitors, ultimate success. This is those first baby steps where you just see nothing but aggressive failure and aggressive success. And that's why that school of coaching, that method of coaching, has almost entirely gone away in soccer. It works in hockey, where sales and trades happen a lot quicker and there's a lot shorter time in between, and you can see that rebuild happen in 2 years. Doesn't work in soccer, and it will not work in this league.
Interesting. It's an interesting theory. I mean, if Mora does stay for next season, which there's been rumors that he won't, who knows if their owners don't go on a crazy spree of acquiring players that are exactly the ones that he wants to have. And, you know, maybe they'll have even more assholes than they currently do. So so who knows? But I mean, it's an interesting theory. And obviously there is a culture of severe aggression, severe, I might even call it toxic masculinity going on there. That's the vibes that I get. I'm sure many, many of the teams in the league have that. It's just not outwardly obvious. But with them, it's outwardly obvious. And I know that we were trashing Cargo for his press conference when he's talking about York being a team without a lot of tools, and we were sort of applauding Mora's response. Obviously, in retrospect, all that is hilarious now for our benefit. But also, the whole idea of pretending not to know who Cargo was in an 8-team league where you've played him 3 times is a bit of a trying to be a Chad move. And I know I called him a Giga Chad in the Discord as like a joke, and then the York United Out of Context Twitter account actually posted it, which is funny. That's fine. I'll take that. But it's almost like a try hard Chad, right? Wearing that suit with the gloves was try hard Chad. And that's the vibe I get from that whole team, is try hard Chad. And the fact that one of the try hardest Chads of the team miss the pen that ultimately locked him out of the playoffs is just two chef's kisses.
I'm gonna say this as a coach who honestly prefers to wear a nice little sports coat and button-up shirt to coach his U14 soccer game, just because I like the persona that I can put across in the niche world of Ottawa youth soccer. I like the character that I can portray there. As you get higher and higher in the sport and more eyes on you, you have to understand that if you're going to commit to a character, you shouldn't commit to being a clown or a copy. He's right in the middle of being a clownish copy of those Premier League coaches who dress to the nines because their talent warrants the paychecks that warrant dressing to the nines at all times. The CPL is the kind of league where, like, Tommy Wheeldon Jr.'s sense of fashion for coaching, I would say, is the pinnacle of how nice you can look while coaching this league. And I mean that in the nicest possible way for anyone who wants to get into coaching. What you wear matters. When you wear it matters.
I was gonna mention Tommy because, like, at least he has a bit of success to back that up, you know, to cosplay like Arsene. But what does Mora have to bring to the table?
While we're talking about Joey's coaching theories, I like to believe, and there's a little bit of circumstantial evidence to back it up, that Wheeldon uses his layers of dress as a way to control his own kind of stress and focus. As a game is going poorly, he'll take off layers, and as it gets back under control, he'll put those layers back on, and it really feels like a kind of stimming thing, where he's just like, cool, gotta focus, jacket's off. Oh, gotta focus, vest is off. Oh, gotta focus, loosen the tie. We're back in, vest's back on. Like, if this works for him, it works for him.
This is funny, because I was clowning about, you know, 3/4 of the way through the game. I was like, man, Mora's really just got a suit on. Like, it's pretty cold out here. And then when he finally had to put the winter coat on, it was all like, you got too cold.
That is commitment to the clowning copying bit.
Oh, I love it. Well, why don't we talk about, you know, probably the best parts of this game, which was the shootout. We're a club that before today, I believe we've been in two shootouts, lost both of them. One was against York in the Can Champ of, I want to say, 2021, or maybe it was 2022. I think it was 2022. And then we were in a penalty shootout in the against York, and then we were a penalty shootout away at Forge, which I think that was last year in 2023.
Yeah, and I was there in person for that one, actually.
You were there in person for that one? Yeah. So we've lost both of them, and we had horrid pens in both of them. Last year, especially. Last year was probably one of the worst pen shootouts I've ever seen in my life. It looked like an under-7 pen shootout. It was awful. This, contrary, was one of the best I've ever seen. Other than Babouli's miss, which, again, two chef's kisses. Every single one of those pens was a banger. They were like all top bins, top corner. I don't think any keeper in the league had a chance of saving any of them.
It was one of those shootouts where, like, if that happened to me while I was playing FM, I would have just turned my computer off and walked away for a little bit. Like, if I'd lost that shootout in that fashion, especially where it's like, you, when you're setting up your penalty takers, you set it up very similarly to the way that, like, a Major League Baseball team sets up their first five batting order. Where you're, yeah, like, the first person here is either going to get a solid hit or they're not. The second person here is going to get a solid hit. This third person here is going to kind of set the stage for what happens next. That fourth person cleans up. That fifth person puts it to bed. They're number two. They're guaranteed hit. Missed.
Yep.
In a sense. And you can tell that from there, the rest of the game plan worked out, but it didn't matter because it's the best first to five, baby.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I mean, that's a really good commentary there. It's very much like you would set up a batting order, a heart and batting order, and how you want them to go. And yeah, the fact that Mo Babouli missed his and he was supposed to be the guaranteed, it didn't matter that they hit out, that we hit out. And I have to applaud the boys because I don't know, with our DNA and our, you know, penchant for bottling in the past 2 years, I expected someone to bottle one of those pens. Be like, no, we've got it up. We're in the lead. I was like, we're gonna bottle this lead, and then someone's gonna miss, and then we're gonna, then the merry-go-round is gonna keep going around. But no, we didn't. We stood firm, and like we said, Every single one of those pens was incredible. And I wasn't expecting them to be called either. I know there's a question about this later, so we'll probably save the actual bits about the order later. But yeah, no, it was top three ATO in the flesh moment for me. I'm glad that I came down for the second week in a row because it was worth everything.
I do have one more moment that for me is a pretty good moment. I think it's one of those moments that you could only enjoy it because I was watching the game both like semi-muted because I was at work. So I had the ticker going, and whenever I had the opportunity, I would step into the back office and just kind of watch the game on my phone until I could see somebody walk in on the security cam. And so there is a moment like right, like the whistle to start extra time. One of the commentators like, was like, you know, but this is a group of professionals who understand that they might have to play extra time, can't even finish a sentence, the penalty gets called. And he's like, so from the perspective of a listener, it was literally, this is a group of professionals who understand that they have to oh my, is that a penalty? It surely
wait a minute.
And it's like, whoops. You can't write these jokes, like they just happen. It was like, I felt bad for my supervisor who was on break behind me, who just hears me just start like crying with laughter. Cause at this point I'm stressed as hell. And that was just a nice little moment of relief where I'm like, yes. Cause like when that goal happened, again, from the perspective of my coworkers, Ottawa scores, I'm like celebrating the back room. I go and I'm like dealing with customers for a little bit. There's a bit of a rush. It comes back. I pull up my phone. I'm like, yeah, game's going well. I text the group chat. That's like just a bunch of like a bunch of us in a different little group chat. I text that. I'm like, the referee should blow the whistle. I click send. The game gets tied up again.
It's tied 2-2.
You're in this chat, Johnny, so you can probably see it as soon as I open my fat fucking mouth.
Oh my God. That's so funny. It was comical, honestly. Like it's funny looking back at it, but like I said, if the pen shooter went the other way, this pod would have been over 20 minutes ago. It was comical. Everything about it was pure comedy, pure drama. I know all of the commentators, all of the talking heads from One Soccer tweeted afterwards. They're like, all time CPL classic. Sometimes I'm sick of being a part of CPL classics, especially when we're shooting ourselves in the foot to allow them to happen. Much like the 4-3 against Forge earlier in the season, it's like I'd like to be part of a classic because we won 5-0 instead of we like literally almost gave up the ghost immediately all two times in a row.
Can I please just have one precedented moment?
Honest to God, I never know what to expect with this team. But before we head to the mailbag, I want to give the flowers to a lot of our players because we had a lot of really great performances. Ollie Bassett, dear Lord, what a fantastic performance. Abu Sissoko, I was glued to him the whole game. I loved it so much. Ruben, Tabla, Aparicio, Didich holding it down the back. It was just... Who did you have highlighted? Did you watched this back, right? Who are you fixated on?
For me, it was Didich. He kept popping up everywhere in the highlight reel, everywhere in the game. He had probably the best miss in CPL history.
Oh my God, I forgot about that.
Like visibly denting the goalpost kind of miss. Like it was one of those ones where you're like, if that went in, baller. The fact that it missed, also baller. Like no, dude, it was great. But aside from that, he just like opening the penalty shootout, he just did so much, and I think this was just a really good just Didich game and a really good start to the playoffs for him.
I wanted to just mention the miss for me kind of like encapsulated how many some okay so I'll give him the pass for doing this, but encapsulates a lot of our attackers when they get nervous and then just smash it instead of being calm and then trying to place it like a proper finisher. This is what we always complain about people like Blue Tabla doing all the time. I would give Didich a pass for that because he is a center back. He is not supposed to have composure in front of goal. He's not normally supposed to be there with the ball at his foot. If anything, it's going to be at his head. So I will give him a pass for it. He can obviously smash the shit out of that ball. We've seen him hit like free kicks in from his previous clubs, so he can clearly do it. Would have been a total baller move if he smashed it in, but like you said, it was still a baller move even though he didn't. But he smashed in his pen, and that pen was absurd. I love a tall CB that there's no tricky things about their penalties. They're like, well, no, I'm just gonna smash it as hard as I can. try and get that, idiot. Like, what else should I do?
I also want to pinpoint, and I'm only going to do this because he's my favorite type of niche role player in football right now. Jesus Delamo. Mm-hmm. I know he didn't do much, but what he did do was play the perfect role of a modern soccer enforcer. Okay. No yellow card, couple fouls, but anytime something happened, anytime a York player did something, no matter where on the pitch, he was in the camera frame out of nowhere, being like, I also speak Spanish and can hear what you're saying, guys. Like, there's a couple times where, like, he's right in the guy's face and the referee is like, oh, I'm not gonna get involved. Whoopsies.
Especially the big brawl at the end too. Like, I think today I checked on Twitter, he tweeted some photos of himself with the game and he's like, this is my team, and I'm like, yeah. And I think this game radicalized him. I think this is the first time he's played against a team that's also full of Spanish speakers. He hasn't been here for very long. I can't remember if he's played York yet already, probably not, but he's mostly been playing us on York are the by far the highest contingent of Spanish speakers in the league. So this is the first time he's really been able to use a forked tongue against his opponents instead of just, you know, be sort of meek and sheepish and use his body. This is the one that radicalized him. He was loving every moment of it.
Well, it made me go back and kind of look at some other highlight reels. He's done this a lot. We've just never either noticed or paid attention to it or whatever it was. But he's always kind of done this.
It's possible his opponents never knew what he was saying, so they never, like, chirped back.
But I love this role of the person who goes in there and takes the flack for the star players, knowing that, like, I might not be the biggest contributor during active play, but I can really get good with the mind games. Not enough of those players out there. Wish there were more.
And, you know, when you add 71 out of 80 accurate passes on top of that, there's really not that much that you can say about 8 passes into the final third as well. 10 recoveries. Hats off. Hats off to Tier as well on the other side. This back three of Delamo, Didic, and Tier is just wonderful. It's almost something coming to fruition. It took forever for Jesus to actually come in. But this is the back three / back five that Cargo clearly wanted all along. Well, I think you've heard enough from us. I think now it's time to hear from you.
CCSG Mailbag.
Welcome back to the Mailbag. This is probably one of the best ones we've had all season because this is one of the better results we've had in a long time. A lot of weight coming off of people's chests on this one. So let's just hop right into it. Question one. By the way, a lot of these, again, are not going to be questions. They're not questions. They're just things that need to be said. And gosh darn, we're going to say them. So question possibly one. What a fucking game. While full of pain, it had everything. For neutrals and one soccer, nothing more they could want aside from fists flying. Is this the top game in ATO history? If not, where does it land in the top five?
Yeah, I'd say this is probably the top game. Now, there's a lot of moments that pop up, but I can't think of a game that had enough cumulative moments to be the one that stands out on its own.
I think being in the playoffs, being against York and ending in a shootout, I think that kind of edges a lot of other of the great classics that we've had. I was going to say the 3-0 away at York was one number one for a while. I think this might edge it. Even though we gave up 2 goals at home and it went down to a penalty shootout, just because of the drama and the just classic moments, I think this probably hits the top for me. I might be forgetting some in the moment, and I'll probably listen back to this and regret not mentioning some other bangers, but I'm sorry, but this... It doesn't get much better than this. Not better as a performance as our team, like the 3-0 away was, but just as far as pure drama and the situation, all the context behind it, I think it probably takes the cake. It's gotta. Safe to say that showing a lack of class from top to bottom has safely put York at the top of my wankings. Am I alone? No. You're not alone.
Escalante era cavalry.
They're up there too. I guess, you know, for the first year we weren't there, so we didn't really experience it. And then later on, we weren't really we just beat them all the time, so I guess we didn't really. Our record against them is stellar, so I guess we kind of had the upper hand on them. I guess Forge obviously is another one that we can put up there, but I don't know, man. It always hits different coming from York because they don't have anything to show for it.
From like a pure ATO standpoint, absolutely it's York, but I think if you were to zoom out entirely and look at everything from a whole, Escalante Air Cavalry.
I can see it. Just to add that, seeing my daughter, who I have never heard swear, flash the middle finger at their bench was a highlight of the match, as was seeing the Mighty Didich jog by in front of their bench to celebrate Ruben Del Campo's 2-1 pen with the coldest stare in their direction. I fucking love this game.
I don't know who sent this, so all I'm picturing is like a 6-month-old just like sitting upright with full human consciousness and just like, oi!
I love like someone like Didich, who seems like a calm, cool, chill, collected person, especially being one of the elder statesmen on the team, totally getting into the rivalry and getting in their face with the stone cold stare at the bench. Clearly, as we said in the beginning of this episode, there's a lot of animosity, not just between the fans, but between the players. And this is like, I don't know, this is so Canadian, dude. This is so hockey. You know what I mean? When the players hate each other, too. Only in the fiercest of derbies do you still get that. A lot of players are too professional. They're not even from the country that they're in. Like, they don't care anymore. But this is so hockey.
I've never heard Didich speak. At least I can't actively recall what his voice is like. But I can only picture him speaking in, like, a thick, cartoonishly evil German accent as he, like, runs past their bench, not moving his arms Terminator style.
Speaking of the rivalry between the players, I'm going to play a clip from the following day. Nate Ingham went on a TSN 1200 and then gave an interview about this game. And then he has this stellar quote. Just listen to this.
It felt like, and we had some fun last week, playing the clips of the two managers after the last match between the two teams earlier in the month. But it really felt like, and I was just looking at player reaction after York had scored each of the two tying goals, that they were really kind of doing the stare down to your bench, et cetera. Was there, in actual fact, a real good hate on between these two teams going into that match yesterday?
Yeah, it felt like it. Yeah, it felt like it. Maybe they can stare us down from the bus home.
Can you still see me from here?
Yeah. That's awesome.
No, it was chippy. It was nasty. And like I said early in the week, if you're going to talk, make sure you get the business done.
That's my fucking captain, ladies and gentlemen. Let's not forget that this guy played for that team.
That's a very Canadian in thing to say to somebody. Just be like, oh, well, you know.
I love it so much, dude. keep, trade, or drop. Jesus Delamo, Danny Moreira, Gabby Antonaro. I know their contracts are different, but assume that we have control of each of them.
You first, me first?
You first.
Keep Delamo, drop Moreira, trade Antonaro.
That's it. That's the answer. Because Delamo was very good. Danny Moreira doesn't have any value in this league. He probably doesn't want to stay here either. And Gabby Antonaro is a young Canadian player that we could probably get something back for as far as Canadians go.
Yeah, I was just going to use this as another opportunity to rag on Danny Moreira.
We give it.
Like,
go
fly
it,
away
it.
Like a goddamn paper airplane when the breeze blows on him. Like, the fact that like him standing next to Cargo in one of the camera shots was like looking at like Andre the Giant next to just like a regular sized person, and Cargo is short as hell.
I know, because this is one of the only times he's come like super close to the dub right after the game. He went up and like talked to Eddie and like a couple of other people, and yeah, no, he's not very tall at all.
They say the camera adds 10 pounds. It also, in his case,
I had to cut some stuff out, and that's what Joey feels about Danny Moore. Listen, he didn't have the worst game. He didn't have the best game. He had a yellow, which I don't think was a yellow. I remember that. That's about all I have to say about that.
Too long, didn't read. He just he just doesn't have it to cut it in the league.
I guess so. We can leave it at that. We've mentioned this before. Some have said that ATO got lucky, but with key goal scoring chances hit by baffling reffing decisions and the first shot on target for York coming in the 94th minute and off of an awkward deflection. That's funny. Did ATO deserve a better result?
Yeah, it was one of those things where we just didn't finish when we should have finished and we let them finish when we shouldn't have. We didn't let it go Ottawa. We came away with the win, and I think that's what matters right now.
I don't think we deserved a better result, to be quite honest with you, because of what I said earlier in this episode, insofar as like inviting all that pressure, knowing that we can't see it out and we've most of the time have not been able to, but doing the same game plan again. No, we deserve to get scored on in the last second. That's what you get for playing that way. I'm sorry. That's what you get for playing that way. What are you going to learn, Cargo? That's what you get. How many times can I say that's what you get? I could have said it 8 times this year, at least. Yeah, anyways, like I said, that's what you get. Speaking of that's what you get, I hope when Dennis Slavonic, not his name, but I support it, went to sleep. I hope when Dennis Slavonic, Slanovich, went to sleep, all he saw was me hip thrusting while hitting the fattest nene he'll ever see in his life. Where's your jumping jacks now, you fraud? We got the nene back!
He can wipe away the tears with the contract that's definitely not getting renewed now.
We got the nene back at nene! A guy who's been on the bench for the past 45 minutes because you got yanked at half during an absolute wank performance. And then, yeah, it's just, we've said this before, especially a York player. I mean, it's the only time they get to see real big fans. Even when they score, they don't celebrate their traveling contingent. They didn't have the biggest traveling contingent, but they had a traveling contingent. There was at least 12 of them there. And I applaud them for showing up. That's great. It's the playoffs. When they scored, they didn't go to them. They went in front of our fans. It's pathetic. And you know it's because they crave that attention because they don't get it at home, so they try to get it in Ottawa.
I mean this in all seriousness. I would not be in disbelief if you were to tell me that the team didn't know they had a traveling contingent.
Maybe. Who knows? I tried to do the thing. I know if Christian's listening, he did it too. I noticed. I try to do the thing where when they score in front of the dub and they come running to it, I just turn around, like go like backs to them. And I know I was a proponent of that. I was like, I think that's what we should all do. And then in the heat of the moment, I tried to do it. And then after about 10 seconds, I turned around and started doing the wanker gesture. So I was like, okay, yeah, this is way easier said than done. I get why it has not caught on. Maybe we can try, but I get why it's difficult. So I do not blame you if you are not successful in just turning around, because it's very difficult. So yeah, get nated. Should we send Shola Jimo to the principal's office for bullying us?
I cast Stop Being Mean to Me.
So he played 75 minutes, which obviously would have been the second half. And then all of extra time. He is what, like 16 years old? I mean, this kid is something. He's done this to us twice now. He's done this to other teams as well. I'll be surprised if he's in the league next year. Actually, I won't be. He's still pretty young, so maybe another year doing this. But no, he's fantastic. And I mean, I was served a bit of humble pie because, or at least a bit of egg on my face, because I mean, you know, we're heckling the whole game. He's on our wing. We're talking about their child being on the pitch. That's, you know, low-hanging fruit. But he made us pay for it, and, you know, whatever. Good on him, I guess.
It may be a hot take. I will never be upset when stellar youth talent, especially, like, when it's a talent that this is what the league is meant for, I'm never going to be upset about it. If they do something phenomenal for us, against us, whatever, if I get to see it and I get to partake in what could be the beginning of an astonishing career, I'm not going to be upset about it. I'm glad to have been a part of that guy's journey, even if he didn't know about it.
Well, it's fun. I mean, imagine seeing like Alphonso Davies score against you with the Whitecaps when he's 17 years old, and then you get to say that later you saw that, you know? That's fun. That's at least at the time exciting to see. I don't give a shit about some 28-year-old dude from Liechtenstein, all right? That guy can go fuck himself. But Shola Gimo, do your thing. Do your thing, young king. Looking back at it now, can't believe I'm saying. Cargo swung his dick around on Sunday by beating York after all his comments and then coming over to the dub after to flex. Gotta respect that.
real same energy as Joe Biden's got right now, knowing that like I don't gotta get reelected. I can say whatever I want.
I can say and do whatever I want.
You hold him accountable.
So I don't know if this is a private moment, but it was public and I saw it happen. So he gave Eddie his clipboard. And I thought that was really funny because I was like, did he see Eddie talk shit about his tactics on Twitter and then said, how's this for tactics? And I would say that flex would hit a bit more if we didn't, you know, give up two equalizers after having two leads, but it was still funny. And yes, looking back on the press conferences now, I foresee me using lots of smiling cargo gifts towards York fans in the distant future over and over again.
Pointing laughing DMs.
Yeah, exactly. Pointing laughing DMs, regardless of what happens in the future. This was the game after he said what he said, and then this is what happened. So yes, as this person so eloquently put it, he swung his dick around. What? Okay, now we're... Sorry, what did you... You were about to say something.
Cargo's cargo.
Yeah, good. I'm glad I stopped and let you come back to that. Well done, Joe. Well done. No, that's it. You're cut off now. That's just end on a high note. I don't know what you're going to say next. I might have to cut it. What did you think of the Penn lineup? Big point of discussion here. It may seem unorthodox at first, but with all set Pete Takers plus Del Campo, would you have made any changes? So our Penn lineup, let me bring it up here right quick. We had Amir Didich, Maxime Tissot, Ruben Del Campo, Alberto Zapater, and Elias Iliadis. Obviously, Ruben, we've seen him take pens. We've never seen Didich take a pen. We've never seen Maxime take a pen. We've never seen Alberto Zapater take a pen. And we've never seen Iliadis take a pen. We've obviously seen many of these players take corners and free kicks and whatnot. But notably, Ollie Bassett, who was obviously on the bench at that time, not taking a pen. So what did you think about this, these choices?
It was probably close to, if not the lineup I would have used personally.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of people in that people would have initially been like, oh, huh. But like, again, you have to zoom out a little bit, look at the greater picture of everything. The first two made absolute sense to me. We go back to talking about, you want to open it strong, so you have a big, intimidating guy go first who is going to knock it in, most likely, and he does. You get your number two guy who's going to score, and it being Tiso was a great choice because he is someone who scores well off of set pieces, and people forget, I think, that penalties are set pieces.
Yeah.
And this is something that Tiso can do, and he took it like a free kick, and that was exactly what was needed to be done. Yeah. And that also kind of set a tone where the next two also took free kick style penalties that went in, and we end it by having someone that we know is comfortable scoring from high pressure situations. You don't score two Olympicos without having a cool head.
That's what I'm saying. Honestly, Iliadis at the end, yeah, we were all nervous because it's pens, but honestly, seeing him go up there, I'm like, man, this is probably the coolest customer on this team. Maybe Didich is up there as well, but like, and then Zapater as well. Like, we literally, you know how when you're playing FM and then you go into a pen shootout and you're like, all right, am I picking, I got three stats to pick from. I'm picking penalties, I'm picking finishing, and then I'm picking, like, what's the last one? Like mental or confidence or something like that. It's like
composure.
Composure. It's like, are you going for purely penalty taking ability, or are you going to also maybe factor composure in there, because this is a high pressure situation? And I know that, like, he wasn't available to be selected to take a pen. I know he scored an Olympico during the game, but I've seen Ollie Bassett miss high pressure penalties, and I would have worried that he would have done the same thing there.
I'm someone personally who would take a high finisher, high composure over only a high penalty any day.
Yeah. And I mean, I hate to say it, I know this guy is hitting a stray, getting strays here for no reason, but I don't think Balu Tabla would have inspired a bunch of confidence in me either. Maybe not. I mean, Sam Salter, I don't think he's ever missed a pen. Or no, he did. He missed one last year in the shootout. I remember they mentioned that was the first pen that he ever missed, because he never missed one with Halifax. But he's abnormally was a pen taker, and he wasn't in the lineup either. Like, we really, really went for mentally strong takers in this. And it was absolutely the right decision.
Yeah, we 100% went with, like, fire support vehicles here. And it worked perfectly for us. The only change I would have made, I think, going back on it, would have been switching where Zapater and Iliadis were in the lineup, and then swapping Zapater out for Salter and having Salter be the finisher, just because, for me, that would have provided just an extra level of comfortability to the mental game. But I think, given everything that we had, the lineup was perfect.
I don't know. I thought Zapater was great. You know, he got his pen, looked at the crowd, just walked right back to the line. It's like, I want that. You know why I want that guy in doing the penalties in the Canadian Premier League semifinal? Because that guy's played against Lionel Messi. He's like, what's pressure? What are you talking about? This isn't pressure. This is a Saturday kickabout with people that could be my kids.
Absolutely. His was also the only penalty that made me go, and I already knew the outcome of the penalty shootout. So,
no, I can see that. Like I said, I have not watched them back again. I just remember how great they felt at the time.
It skimmed the bar. It was a little close for comfort.
Okay, speaking of, I want to mention something hilarious. At halftime, you wouldn't have seen this. So at halftime, they were doing a thing where they're shooting, not penalties, because they're outside of the 18-yard box against Wally, the costume, the mascot.
Yeah, they do it every game.
Yeah, okay, so they're doing it from distance. And this guy, the last taker, he does the Zidane in the 2006 World Cup final Panenka off the bottom of the bar against Gianluigi Buffon. He, from outside the box, by the way. It's flying up. It hits the bottom of the crossbar, hits inside the net by about maybe a foot, and then bounces out of the net. And at the time, we were like, oh man, he missed it. That's sort of a bummer. And then we saw the replay, and we were like, huh? Zizou, is that you?
Sign him now.
Dude, I was losing it. I was like, there's no... I was like, you could try that a million more times for the rest of your life and never do that again. And we got to witness it.
Gonna be completely honest with you, as soon as you started with Zidane, I was like, oh, he headbutted the dinosaur? And I got real excited for a moment.
At the time, I turned to Patrick and Kev next to me. I was like, yeah, that's probably the most baller move we're gonna actually see all day today at the soccer.
At the soccer.
At the soccer. Last question, as always, a funny one. Everyone was talking about how Mora was dressed like Agent 47 or John Wick. So what Halloween costume do you think Cargo and Bobby should wear this Saturday?
They should dress as each other, because it would be a cute couple's costume.
Dude, that's actually a really great answer. It would be so funny if Bobby shaved and Cargo wore a fake beard and like a white t-shirt that looks like it's probably got mustard stains on it. No, that's good. I don't even think I can have a better answer than that, to be quite honest with you.
My only other answers were get cut, and I was warned not to make those for Johnny anymore.
I know, I'm a big meanie. I'm an authoritarian podcast host. Gotta keep you in line. Maybe if they went as like a couple cue balls, I don't know. I don't have anything better than yours. Oh, good mailbag. This is a good episode, man. I'm glad that we had one of these to not finish off the season, because we still got at least one more to go. But it's nice that we didn't go out with a whimper with a 10-minute episode of like, yeah, all right, that was all shit. We'll see you next year. Bye.
Sorry, bit of a delayed answer. I just thought about when you said cue ball. They could.
Oh my god, what's the game?
They could be like, they wear like shirts and make it look like they're red Solo cups, and then their heads are the ping pong balls.
Oh, okay, that's cool.
Yeah, and they just walk around, and they just walk around with like a group of like six of them.
Yeah, no, that's cute. They could also, they mentioned Agent 47 in this question. They could also both be Agent 47 and get the fake tattoos, barcode tattoos in the back of their heads,
or really commit and get real ones.
You won't do it. You won't do it, coward. Again, fantastic mailbag. Thank you so much for this. So yes, Saturday, Forge FC, 4 p.m. away. There is buses. If you want details, season seat members, check your inboxes. CCSG members, check your members page. The details are there. I've been following the Discord today, and honestly, it seems like this is going to be friggin' gangbusters, dude. This might be one of the best away trips ever. So look into this.
Gonna quickly note here, as of 6:14 p.m. on recording day, one of the insiders has said that bus one is apparently sold out. So work fast, boys, work fast.
And boys and girls, and I want to say that these went on sale like a couple hours ago too. So, oh man, this is gonna be so sick. Joe, are you going?
No, I will be at the pub, unfortunately.
At the pub. So are we going to have a nice watch party as well for people that cannot make it?
We will have something. I don't think we're going to plan any big pre-show stuff, but we will for sure have a presence, and I will talk to the bar and see if I can't get anything special going.
Cool. It's funny enough, I would almost be glad if the watch party is very small, because that would mean that everybody's on the fucking bus. Oh, I love it. So yeah, I don't even want to talk about, maybe I do want to talk about, Forge is on a bit of a friggin' losing streak at the moment, aren't they? I'm not gonna lie to you, man. This result has got me feeling bullish going into this. We won there twice this year. Why not again? No, sorry, once. We won there once this year. But three times against them all year. So what do you think? What do you think our chances are?
Ottawa has already proven themselves to be a club that has and will continue to set a lot of firsts for this league. That's my statement.
So what Joe is saying here is that this might be the first final that does not involve Forge FC.
You can interpret my statement. My statement is what my statement is.
I've been
doing this about a year now. I've started to catch on.
I love how a week ago we're like, yeah, we're going to whimper out of the playoffs, and then that's going to be it. Now we're like, we're going to beat Forge in the playoffs, baby. Going to the final, be the first final without, and we're going to go to Calgary for the final.
One of Johnny's eyes just fell out of his skull while he was doing that.
I did the Joe Rogan watching the UFC bit. Oh my goodness. Well, so yes, check on the details on that bus if you want to go. And if not, then go and watch it at the pub. As always, stay tuned to the Writer's Shed, Forward Press, Players Rankings, Match Day in Review. These things all continue to happen. Our fantastic writers are always writing great content. Become a member of CCSG, $20 a year, $15 for students. Funds things like TIFOs, events, domain costs, etc. Get you access to exclusive events, merch, Discord server, blah, 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 blah. Ticket links don't matter anymore because we don't have any home games. But as I said, not just season seat members, but CCSG members, check your members page on the website if you're interested on getting on the bus. Joe, any last words?
Almost at Letty.
Almost at Letty. The Forge. Let's fucking go, boys.